With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
Yeah, baby! Here we go, we're going live right now.
The Killer Bees are counting down to Texans training camp.
Here we go, tackle football, let's play.
With the top 10 storylines of the Houston Texans season.
Training camp just around the corner. The rookies report, just a few days, they report on July 24th. Then all the veterans will report on July 26th. So we're counting down the days to training camp opening, and we're counting down the top 10 Houston Texans storylines in the 2022 season. A couple days ago on Monday, we did who's the lead back for this team. Is Laremy Tunsil invested? The conversation we had yesterday. The conversation that we have today, who I think is the Houston Texans' best defensive player.
Yes, you do.
So you guys know who I'm talking about. If you're a loyal listener, you know who I'm talking about as well.
Johnny?
Does John Grenard take the next step in his NFL career? Storyline at number 8 for the Killer Bees.
I mean, you know, we discussed this a little bit a couple weeks ago. And I think that he could. I think that the best thing that can happen for John Grenard is to have talent put around him that's going to develop. The young players that were added, to have them make an impact, be able to do some things, because otherwise offensive coordinators are going to look and say, there's the guy we got to double. There's the guy that we got to pay the most attention to. And as long as we do that, we should be fine. And we don't have to worry about, you know, all the different possibilities in terms of what could come at us defensively to thwart whatever we're doing, running our offense. I think that if you get more players that offensive coordinators have to pay attention to, he has a chance to get more freedom, more one-on-ones, and more chance to wreak havoc and do what he's capable of doing. So, is it possible? Yes. And we've said this over and over again. I like what they've done in terms of the young talent that they've added. But are they there yet to where that they can kind of draw some attention away from him and look at other people so that he can do more? I don't think they're there yet. Maybe next year. This year, you just hope John Grenard can do what he did last year and maybe a little bit more.
Can John Grenard take the next step? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. To me, the next step is double-digit sacks. Right. Like, if we're describing and trying to define what the next step is for the third-year pro, John Grenard, is 10 sacks a fair number to say what is the next step for John Grenard? If John Grenard would have played in every game last year, he hits double-digit sacks. He had 8 sacks in 12 games. So you're looking, he's getting a sack, 2 sacks every 3 games, right? So if he just played 15 games, he gets into double-digit sacks. Now, being on the field matters, right? Our good friend CP, what did he always say? Attendance is part of the grade. Yeah. So, like, that does factor in. He needs to be on the football field to obtain the numbers to what we would define as taking the next step in his NFL career. I believe he's going to. Look, like, if you look at a career plight of any football player in the NFL, are they their best at a rookie? No. Are they at their best as a second-year pro? There's a considerable gap from their rookie year, but still not
their
best. But
they're showing improvement.
I think their peak years are like years 4 through 7, years 4 through 8, somewhere around there. So he's a year closer to that. I expect John Grenard to take the next step. He's going to be a double-digit sack guy this year, 2022. For the Houston Texans.
I think that you touched on it, though. The best ability is availability. Sure. And so, you know, you've got to prove that you can stay healthy. And that goes a variety of different ways, from conditioning and training and doing things, if you know that, to combat certain things that you've had in the past. But you just got to be able to stay on the field and sustain the effort that you put through for 12 games a year ago. That's such a key factor. And I think, like I said, that's why I think that he's not going to suck by any way. I don't think he's going to take a step back. I think maybe a half step this year, but then I'm with you. I think that real window of being in your peak years performance-wise, 4 through 7, is when I think he could really have a breakout, because then if you have another good draft and you add a couple pieces in either in your front 7 or you maybe your linebackers again, you go to that and say, okay, now you've got a more complete front seven to where he can be moved around. He can do some things where he can – it's not just sacks then. It's tackles for losses. Mm-hmm. How many plays is he blowing up, right? I think that you could see a bigger jump a year from now, but I don't think he's going to regress at all. I think he'll take another half step forward.
You think he gets to 10 sacks?
I do.
I think he gets to 10 sacks as well. I believe he takes the next step. One of the counterpoints that you talk about when we look at John Grenard is like what the Texans have on the other side of the defensive line, which, I mean, look, it obviously is a huge factor. I think it's a really good counterpoint. I believe the defensive line could be very, very good for the Houston Texans. When I say very, very good, I mean relative to the rest of the Houston Texans, not relative to the rest of the NFL. Mm-hmm. So let me backpedal there a little bit. I believe that the defensive line could be one of the best units on this football team, like top 20, top 25 in the NFL, if we're comparing it to the rest of the league. I like your nose tackles, right? I like Roy Lopez. I like your defensive tackle, Malik Collins. So they're going to take some attention, not all the attention away. But I also feel like you upgraded on the other side of the ball. Real quick, name the 2021 Houston Texan defensive end on the other side of the ball from John Grenard. Can't do it. I know that the names that they brought in on the other side aren't splashes. I know that they're not sexy, but it's an upgrade to what you had last season. The Ogbo Okorongo, hope he works here for a long time, dude, that you signed from the Rams. Mario Addison, who's a decent football player. And then Jerry Hughes. Like, I don't think Jerry Hughes has much left in the tank.
He's long in the tooth.
But he's an upgrade over who you had last season. So I think the attention that you're seeking from the other half of the defensive line is going to overall help Grenard more than it did a year ago.
Here's where I think that you can see this. If you do it the way they're doing it, you can see this flip-flop. Right now, Jerry Hughes, they're hoping, he's a very intelligent player. So they're hoping that with the doubles going to Grenard on the other side, that him getting one-on-ones and with his intelligence level, having played the position for years at a high level, that he might be able to do some things for you short term. And then in a year or two, when you get someone else on the other side that's younger and faster and more athletic at this point than Jerry Hughes, now you say, well, now you can turn the tables, and now they're going to pay more attention over there, and Grenard can kind of wreak havoc on the other side and get more freedom.
Not to put the cart ahead of the horse too much, but you could potentially upgrade over John Grenard in a year.
No doubt.
Like, if you're in a spot where you're taking Willie Anderson, how much are you liking John Grenard as
Willie
your number
Anderson,
two defensive
the Heisman
end?
Trophy favorite right
could,
now.
Could you imagine, though? Like, now all of a sudden, John Grenard, who we're talking about taking the next step up in his professional career, who we think could be a second, third-tier defensive end in the NFL, be a double-digit sack guy, and now he's your second option coming off the edge. That's scary.
That would be fantastic.
Like, that's a scary thought. Like, we look at quarterback a lot. If you want to say that edge rusher, which I think edge rusher is probably in the top three most important positions in football, I would say it's second. I'm putting it ahead of corner. I'm putting it ahead of
wide receiver. Salary wise, just took a big leap
for sure. But because of that, like even like you want to throw in the financial talks of like what it means to bring in a receiver. Like defensive end to me is the second most important position on a football field because you're trying to combat the quarterback, which is the most important position on a football field. Last year for the Texans, look at this murderer's row of guys that were sacking the quarterback for the Texans behind John Grenard. Grenard only played 12 of the 17 games. He led your team by double over anybody else in sacks. You're getting nothing from the pass rush. The second leader in sacks last year for the Texans was Jacob Martin, who had four sacks. Of course, he came over in the Jadeveon Clowney trade. Three sacks apiece for Camus Grugier-Hill, who's still on this team, and then Whitney Mercilus. Like, that was like addition by subtraction, just bringing in the Jerry Hughes, just bringing in the Addison, just bringing in the Ogbo. Like, I think you upgraded opposite of John Grenard. That's going to help his sack total, and then also the fact that, hey, play 17 games and you'll get to 10 sacks.
Better talent, better depth, better experience, I think can help. But, yeah, I mean, obviously that's a portion of the field that has to be paid attention to. Lovie Smith, as a defensive-minded head coach, is going to actually probably help that a great deal as well in determining what they do. But, you know, as they look going forward, there's going to be options for them. Ideally, your situation is that, you know, Davis Mills does something that you and I don't think that he's going to do, which is make you forget about quarterback in the draft a year from now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go and focus on Anderson or get yourself someone that could actually help your defense with pass rush. So I think that it's going to get better. But for now, for me to think that he's going to take that next step this year when everybody's going to focus on him, I just don't see it happening.
But
I
you think, said 10 sacks.
That's the half step, right?
Yeah.
I said he can take a half step. I just don't think he's going to take the biggest jump that he could take, which might be when there's someone to worry about on the other side.
Let me ask you this variable, because we've talked about the, you know, the pieces around him, because pieces around you are going to make you better.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he did have 8 sacks last year in 12 games. How about the fact that it's the second year of the Lovie Smith defense? Because last year was the first year of the Lovie Smith defense. Of course, Lovie's still going to call the defensive plays. So the continuity aspect, because we talk continuity a lot about the offensive side of the ball, how important it is for a quarterback to have one system, one playbook, and just master that one. How important do you think it is for a defensive end for Jonathan Greenard?
I think it's important. I think it's important because you start to learn your coordinator's tendencies. You start to learn what your coaching staff expects of you. And then if you get someone else that comes in and has different ideas and different philosophies, you've got to change everything you do on a snap-by-snap basis. That can't make you feel confident. A lot of what goes through a defensive player's mind is feeling confident no matter what play is called, whatever the defense is called for that particular down, that you're going to be able to do what you need to do. You know where you're supposed to be. You know who you're responsible for. You know what you're going to be able to go against. And I think that when you get, and we see this all the time with quarterbacks that have multiple head coaches and offensive coordinators, they never feel comfortable, and with that comes confidence. You have to have confidence playing the defensive positions, especially when you're trying to get to the quarterback. I think it can only help John Greenard to be in a system where he knows it like the back of his hand now, and he can feel more comfortable on every play.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt, right? It matters more than zero. I don't know. Like, you want to scheme the guy as best as you can, stunts, different things like that. So it helps the fact that he's going to be familiar with the situation. But if you put Myles Garrett in any defensive system, Garrett's going to be Myles Garrett. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there's a handful of players that, you know, no matter where you put them and what you do, you know that they're going to – Aaron Donald, you could put in on any team in this league, and he's going to wreak havoc.
Now, I never think that Greenard's going to be a Tier 1 pass rusher. I think he could be a Tier 2, Tier 3. Like, what do you think his peak is by the time it's all said and done?
I would agree with that. I think Tier 2 would be the ceiling. I think he could be a Tier 2 pass rusher. And again, if he's on a defense like a lot of the Steelers' defense of the past, where you have multiple guys that can rush the quarterback, multiple guys that are athletic enough to also be able to drop back in coverage and pick up a back or a tight end or do some things depending on what they're throwing at the offense from play to play, everybody's going to get theirs. I mean, and you've seen Watt with all the different guys that they've had in Pittsburgh be able to really capitalize on the fact that he's got so much talent around him. If you just keep drafting as high as the Texans have been drafting and you add other front seven type players to the mix, everybody's going to get better. But for him individually, I think that the expectation should, at the high level, should be Tier 2.
Yeah, I feel like he gets the double-digit sacks this year. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure he's ever going to be the best player on a good defense.
That's exactly right.
But if you do upgrade defensive end and he's your number two defensive end, it could be very scary for NFL offenses.
The other key is your secondary, because the better your secondary is, the better chance he has to get his numbers to go up.
We didn't even talk about the Stingley factor and how that could relate for John Greenard. Does Greenard take the next step? Does he get to double-digit sacks in 2022? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We, the Killer Bees, we scoffed at the ESPN Top 10 rankings. We scoffed at the Athletics rankings, the Pro Football Focus rankings. The Killer Bees have put together their own Top 10 quarterback list. We look at the bottom half of that Top 10 when we return. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, man, I'm telling you right now, I got to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I tell you about them all the time because they get results for people. That's the main thing. I'm not going to speak for a company if I don't believe in them personally and I don't see them getting results for me and or others. And I think in this case, I've seen both. I've seen Apollo Men's Health for both men and women get more energy in their lives on a daily basis. To have people tell me the impact it's had going to Apollo, getting interested in things like finding out all about hormone therapy and realizing that they're going to try it. And after they try it for a few weeks or a few months, they come back and say, oh my God, I've got so much more energy. I'm going to the gym again. I'm having more fun and being able to play with my kids. I'm spending all the time I need to at work and I'm wide awake and I'm on top of everything and I feel so much better. That's the kind of results that Apollo is used to getting because they care about their patients and they do everything in their power to make sure that their plans come to fruition and they get them results. You can be the next in line. Go to ApolloMH.com and book your first appointment. You'll find out that most major insurance is accepted and there's discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank. On your first official visit, you'll get a free body composition analysis if you're trying to work out again. Or you'll get a free B12 shot, which I get every week, which gives you a little bit more energy but doesn't put you on the testosterone program. It's fantastic. They do great things. They have 2 locations to better serve you in your downtown Houston, and their only focus is making sure you get where you need to go and you get the results that you want and need. It's absolutely the people that should be doing what they're doing for you, too. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees create their own content. We don't need ESPN.com to tell us who the top 10 quarterbacks are in the NFL. We don't need CBS to tell us who their top 10 quarterbacks are. We can just take our own poll. Blanker's poll, my poll, Brendan's poll,
you leave
all
my
three
poll
of our polls, taking the top 10 quarterback ranking. So what we did, we each ranked our top 10, 1 through 10. I did it, Blanker's did it, Brendan did it. Brendan put together the ranking. So, like, literally, we have no idea what the Killer Bee top 10 is right now. Brendan put it all together.
So
Blankers and I don't.
Right.
Brendan put it together, and I think he's going to post a graphic here on Twitter here pretty soon, at ESPN97.5 on Twitter. So let's start this list. We're going to only look at the 10 through 6 here and a couple of honorable mentions. We'll take a look at the top 5 at 2:15, so make sure you're listening in an hour. The other receiving votes, there might already be some debate and some controversy and some drama before we even take a look at the top 10. Other receiving votes just outside of the top 10 in the NFL. How about Lamar Jackson not cracking the Killer Bee top 10?
Well, I had him in my top 10. I
did not.
I had him in my top 10, and I think when you're – look, everybody can take the pot shots that they're taking at Lamar Jackson, and obviously he's on everybody's radar right now because he's trying to get this contract hammered out, and Ryan Clark has been, you know, ringing the bell for him as being some guy that's been overlooked and overly scrutinized, and other guys are saying, look, he just still can't throw the ball efficiently enough to please the other critics. I think he's still, when you look at his impact on a football game and all the different ways he does that with his athleticism and his ability to extend plays. And I'll tell you why more when I see the rest of the list and see who you guys had and who's in and who's out. But I think that there's enough guys that, especially like taking ESPN's list into consideration, there's enough guys that haven't done anything in several years, even though they've had a hell of a career, to where I don't think that he should pay the price for their longevity.
So you're offended. You're offended Lamar Jackson is not in your top 10. Are you offended? 713-780-3776. He was the 2019 MVP, but do you know when Branham is in attendance, Lamar Jackson's 0 for 2 in his football playing career?
I actually had Lamar on my list too, so
did
Jeremy
you?
Dragged him down all by himself.
How did y'all both have him in the top 10, but he didn't have enough to get
well,
in the top
10? Well, I had him at 9,
10.
So okay. He didn't get much credit.
I had him at 9 also.
So he didn't get a ton of points.
So I prevented Lamar Jackson from being in the Killer Bee top 10, and I love it. That's a badge of honor.
By the way, ironically, I've heard from quotes from Harbaugh that said that stat that Jeremy just gave has been very impactful in their negotiation.
Yeah, I saw him laying on his back a ton. Two other quarterbacks in the other receiving votes. That's right, at Louisville, whenever he was winning the Heisman and whenever he was in national title contention until they played the Cougars on one Friday night at TDECU. Russell Wilson, outside of the Killer Bee top 10, other receiving votes. See, I had him number 10. This is one that I had in my top 10 that's not in the Killer Bee top 10.
Again, I had him at 10 in a tie with David Carr's brother.
You had ties in your top 10?
One.
That says so
I
much
I let him
about
have
you.
The one.
How many points did they get? 1.5 points for him?
No, I just give them both one.
Okay.
Skewed things a little bit, but not enough to matter.
Why is that something that says so much about me? Why can't I do that?
10.
When I couldn't make up my mind between the two, so because I know it was going to be a consensus,
take a stance.
I threw him back in there.
One of them.
And there's the quarterback that ESPN had higher that I thought very, very long and hard about keeping out of my top 10 and dropping him out. Russell Wilson, for all he's done in his career, for all he's done for the first 6 to 8 games of a season, Russell Wilson's got a whole hell of a lot to prove to me this year.
Yeah,
and I don't think that what I saw when he came back from injury, and then how you can say he was injured all you want. In the last several years with Seattle, in the second half of the season, he fades, he falls off the planet, and I just don't think he's the quarterback he once was.
Did you have Russell Wilson in your top 10, Brendan?
I had him at 10 as well, so
wow.
It sounds like we all had him, but just too low.
All right, one other quarterback that was an honorable mention, not in our top 10, Derek Carr, David Carr's brother. So all this that we're saying that Derek Carr should be a top 10 quarterback, Killer Bee say no, he should not. All right, number 10, we get our top 10 list started, top 10 NFL quarterbacks going into 2022. This quarterback is lower than I had him rated. At number 10, Deshaun Watson.
See, I didn't have him in my list.
Wow.
I did not either. So you are the reason Deshaun Watson is placed above Russell
Wilson. I had Deshaun Watson as my number 6 quarterback in my top 10. So when you put together the average of the Killer Bees, my top 6, my 6th ranking, and you didn't have him in the top 10, you didn't have him in the top 10. How did you have Derek Carr ahead of Deshaun Watson?
I don't know if he's going to play, and he also hasn't played for multiple years. So I don't know, as much as you and I have gone back and forth on this, I don't know if he slipped. I don't know where he's at. I don't know if he's even going to suit up this year. So to have him in the top 10 for this season, I just can't do it.
One of the most talented quarterbacks in the NFL. You're right, though. He hadn't played in a year. Probably won't play in a year and a half at best. Mm-hmm. So he was very tough whenever I was ranking. He was my most moved quarterback when I was putting together my top 10. But eventually, talent played out. Number 9 in the Killer Bee top 10 quarterbacks. Your guy, my guy, everybody's guy,
Case Keenum?
Kyler Murray, number 9 on the Killer Bee top 10.
I did not have him, not shockingly, in my top 10.
I had him 9. Brendan must have had him top 5.
I had him at 7.
Okay, so Brendan had him 7, I had him 9.
There's just too many other good quarterbacks in this league.
Yeah, Derek Carr.
I've seen him. Look, I've seen the way Kyler Murray just throws balls up in traffic and basically gets bailed out by his good receivers. And I've seen him cower and completely run and hide in playoff games. I'm not impressed.
Yeah. What would he have to do for him to be top 10, in your opinion?
I mean, start leading his team by more than just his legs and throwing the ball up in the air. Like, you know, taking advantage of the fact that he still has good receivers, you know, making smart decisions and showing that he's got the cojones to stay in there in the pocket when he feels some heat coming from the outside. Step up in the pocket, make some plays before you just start to run.
Number 8 on the Killer Bee top 10 quarterback list, Dak Prescott.
There was one that I kind of had, like you said, I had him fluctuating in a lot. I was like, is he even going to be in my top 10? But then the more I looked at it, the one thing that he has to get more credit for than most is the fact that he has stabilized into more of a real quarterback in terms of making reads, not just playing from behind, but making the throws into the tight windows, as well as the easy throws, the long throws, and knowing when to run. I think he's matured a lot. I think he's earning a majority of the money that at first I thought he wasn't worth, and I think that he'll continue to do that. Their receivers scare me a little bit, making CeeDee Lamb the number one guy, but I think he'll be fine.
Flirted with 5,000 yards a few years ago, orchestrated the number one offense in the NFL a couple years ago, and then bounced back nicely last year. Dak, number 8 on the Killer Bee top 10 quarterback list. Number 7, I didn't have this guy in my top 10. Matthew Stafford, NFL champion, Matthew Stafford.
Look, I don't know if it's a luxury or a pleasure or not, but I watched him twice a year for, you know,
both
for the first, what, however long he's been in the league until this last season, you know, at least, what, 10 years, Brendan?
I'm thinking it's 12.
Okay, so I've seen him play. I know he can play. I knew he could make the throws. I knew he grasped the quarterback position. He just never was surrounded by enough talent. The fact that he got to the Rams and did what he did, and he won some games with his arm, and he led that team in every step of the way, including in the biggest game of the year, I think he completely warrants and deserves to be where he's at.
Important note on Matt Stafford. He is higher on our consensus list than he was on my list.
Really?
Joel dragged him up.
So where did you have Stafford ranked?
I had him at 8.
So Brendan had him at 8. You must have had him like top 4. 5.
And 4.
He didn't even make my top 10.
Out of 4.
If you would have had him ranked, he might have been the top 5.
Sean McVay can pull anything out of anybody. Number 6.
Any booty?
On the Killer Bee top 10 quarterback list, Joe Burrow, the other Super Bowl quarterback.
Look, I think when you talk about Joe Burrow and you talk about when I thought a year ago, instead of taking Ja'Marr Chase, they had to address the offensive line, and especially because they almost crushed their and ruined their franchise quarterback in his rookie season, I thought that this might be a tougher year for him. The fact that he just basically made all the throws, he stepped up big in big moments. There was never a moment too big for him. He handled everything. He took his team to the Super Bowl. I mean, he's proven everything he needs to prove to me that this guy is for real, and not only for the short term, for the long term. He ain't going anywhere.
I actually had him number 5, so 6 a little lower on the aggregate, the average list. So other receiving votes, not in the top 10, Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, Derek Carr, The 10 through 6, Watson 10, Kyler Murray 9, Dak 8, Stafford 7, Joe Burrow 6. Tear it apart. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We'll take a look at the Killer Bee top 5 quarterbacks coming up at 2:15, so make sure you're glued for that. When we return, Aaron Judge yesterday said something during the All-Star game that people are losing their minds over and saying that it's the reason that he is leaving New York. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Hall of Fame Billy Sims, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Your teams, our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Aaron Judge yesterday before the game. Everybody saying, oh, what he said before the game. Is it Marley or Marty? I can never remember. Marley Rivera. She's doing a little live Q&A with Aaron Judge right before the
game.
She's
a little over the top for me.
She's a bit much, dude. Did you see her during the home run derby?
Yanking
Julio Rodriguez to go hug Stanton, to go hug Judge so she could put it up on her Insta?
Yep.
Like, my goodness.
Yep.
She gets things done, though. I kind of, you know, she got to go get it attitude. I don't hate that. But anyways, here, in case you missed it, because everybody's talking about this today, because Aaron Judge, what he had to say to Marley Rivera is proof that he's leaving New York. He's gone. He's never going to be a Yankee after this year. Here was that conversation yesterday from the All-Star game.
And he has a son named Jacob who came up the other day really upset from his school in Astoria. He just came up and he's like, are you telling me that Aaron Judge may not be a Yankee after this year? What do you have to tell to Jacob right there and to all your fans that want you to remain in a Yankee uniform? I wasn't going to put you on the spot. I mean, we're on live TV.
Yeah, no, Jacob, buddy. You know, we got a lot of great Yankees on this team. You know, there are a lot of great Yankees. Be here for a long time, you know, so don't be upset. Hopefully you'll be a Judge fan for life.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you for your time. Back to you guys.
All right, what'd you think when you heard that? Judge and
good for him
Rivera.
To can play that game, right? I mean, I think that all's fair in love, war, and negotiations. And I think that, you know, the D-bag that is Brian Cashman already did something that pissed off Judge well before they got through the arbitration process and got to where they are now. In that both sides, if you believe what you've heard and read, decided that they were going to keep all the talks and negotiations under wraps and held in private. Brian Cashman had a press conference the very next day after that decision was made and that discussion had taken place and basically said, we made him an offer at this amount of money for this many years and he turned it down, which completely and very, very fairly rubbed Aaron Judge and his camp the wrong way. So the best thing you can do to combat that to say two can play this game too is do exactly what Aaron Judge just did right there and say, you want to play hardball? You want to play tough guy? I can do that too. I can explore my options. I know there's going to be teams that are going to be coming with their checkbook open.
I had a lot of issues with this, to be honest with you.
Good.
First off, from the Rivera point of view, like Aaron Judge to me sounded ticked off. He was asked that question.
He should have been.
Whenever he was literally dealing with it for like the last 3 months and literally dealt with it during the press conference Q&A where they make the players available to literally the entire media that's covering the All-Star game. So he's answered that question probably 100 times. He gets ambushed here,
yep,
using a little kid as part of it as
she
well.
She reminds him it's live TV
yeah.
to even stick it to him a little bit more like he's got to answer it.
So I couldn't stand that aspect of it. But then I also couldn't stand the reaction saying that, well, Aaron Judge is good as gone now. And like I look at this as kind of like this is what media in 2022 is, that you have one response and literally you ignore the other 99 responses that Aaron Judge has already made about how much he wants to continue being a New York Yankee. But those are boring. Those aren't sexy. Those aren't fun. They don't have the vitriol. Right?
Well, this is Verlander's already written his swan song. He's leaving
yeah.
Houston.
It's the clickbait, right? It's the headline porn that is out there. Aaron Judge literally on, yesterday was Tuesday, so on Monday, during his All-Star festivities, the media scrum, talking with everybody 100 times, here's what Aaron Judge had to say literally Monday, 2 days ago.
It's never been a big concern of mine, you know. It's never, the money, the contract, stuff like that has never been, you know, why I play this game, you know. You know, I play this game because I love it. I play this game because, you know, God gave me a gift to be here and I never want to take that for granted. So for me, it's never been about the money. I want to play for the Yankees. I want to, you know, be here for a long time.
I want
to
play.
If it works out, it works out. But if it doesn't, it doesn't. It's out of my hands. You know, I can't really control and that kind of stuff. So for me, it's just been about focusing on the game and playing the game. And, you know, when I'm a free agent and we decide where we go, you know, we'll figure that all out later.
I want to play for the Yankees. I love it here. Basically saying, if the Yankees are going to give me closer at top dollar, I'm going to be a New York Yankee. Yeah, we're looking at this question yesterday saying that Aaron Judge is not going to be a Yankee because he froze and hesitated in a moment when he was ticked off and annoyed.
I wouldn't go that far. I would say that he fell short of that. He did say, look, I want to be a Yankee. But I think that at the end of the day,
he said it's in their hands.
He's still going to probably weigh the way he was treated and the amount of money that they're dealing with. And look, he went through the arbitration process.
But they settled.
I know, but during the process, that's when the harsh realities happen, because you got to hear a team that says they love you and they want you to basically crap on you to try and save a couple of dollars. And I think that it was a reality check for him in a lot of ways. So I think he said the right things in the press conference. You're right. But I think that, look, at the end of the day, as much as he says why he plays the game, they also know that they're not going to just throw money away and leave it on the table, especially if they don't feel like the team that you've given your blood, sweat, and tears to for a certain amount of time, if you don't feel like they got your back 100%.
I'm not saying that Aaron Judge won't leave the New York Yankees, but the reaction, because he was ticked off and hesitated and paused in a moment when he felt that he was ambushed, and then everybody on Twitter said, oh, he's leaving New York. He's never going to be a Yankee. He hates his time there. Like, that's so far from the truth. Like, the backlash you get from one viral moment, mm-hmm. as opposed to literally 99 other moments or a mountain of moments where he's telling you things like he told you yesterday or 2 days ago. I love New York. I want to be a Yankee. It basically said it's in their hands, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's also July 20th. Like, usually this stuff happens after the end of the season. You're going to enter free agency, but they can, of course, re-sign him out of free agency and bring him back to New York. If the New York Yankees give him the best offer, he's going to be a New York Yankee, regardless of what he said yesterday to Marty Rivera, despite the arbitration stuff where there were some hurt feelings. If the Yankees give him the biggest contract, Aaron Judge is going to be a New York Yankee.
Right.
Literally forget about everything else. He's gone because of how he responded on live television's ridiculous.
It doesn't sound like they want to do that just yet. And I think that that's where Brian Cashman's got to be careful, because he also knows that he is tiptoeing on a more fine line with his finances than he's been in the past, no matter how much they've just been a cash cow, because you're overpaying Stanton, because you're overpaying Garrett Cole, because you've already got a lot of big salaries on the books for this team. And I think in a lot of ways, though Stanton's actually stayed healthy most of this year and been able to be productive, I think that some of that money you wish you didn't spend
and
moves you didn't make. Right.
But that's a different conversation, in my opinion.
But I think that, look, at the end of the day, you're right. Money talks, and if he wants to walk, it won't be because the Yankees weren't willing to match every other offer. But if the Yankees start trying to nickel and dime it a little bit, he's also showing, I love to play the game, and if he's here, he's here, and if he's not, he's not. I don't like what Marley did at all.
No.
And I don't know if you caught this or not, because then I followed up on it on Twitter. And Clint Frazier, who was a one-time Yankee, who's now, I don't know if he's still in baseball, he's with the Cubs for a while, he went out and said, this is the same chick that essentially went out after she did something similar to piss him off, and then she just tweeted out to the masses, oh, you guys don't get it. This is a running joke between me and Clint that we've had ever since training camp, whatever. And he went out and said, I'm still waiting to figure out what the running joke was.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how it goes with the media as well as I do. You do this to one guy, it's one thing. You do this to and start making this a pattern, people are going to be like, stay away from me.
To me, it just symbolizes what media is in general, whether it's sports, whether it's politics. And it doesn't matter even like what your agenda is or what side it is. Like, you're literally going to ignore 99% of what has been said and then use 1% on something that goes viral in an ambush moment to let it be the headline porn, to let that form your opinion of all of this. And it's not to say that Aaron Judge is going to leave New York, because New York has been a little bit more financially responsible with the new Steinbrenner versus the old George Steinbrenner. Cashman has been willing to save a few bucks because of the CC Sabathia deal, because of the Jacoby Ellsbury deal, but he's also been willing to spend money. Garrett Cole. You mentioned the trade for Giancarlo Stanton, who has one of the biggest contracts ever, re-signing LeMahieu. So, like, they try to be fiscally responsible, but they're still the New York Yankees. As far as it goes with, like, Judge being a Yankee beyond this season, what was said yesterday has zero influence over that. Now, whenever you do talk about will he be a New York Yankee again, he's 30 years old. You know our opinion of re-signing guys into their 30s for huge, huge contracts. I'm not sure he's going to be a New York Yankee after this season. How much interest do they have in Juan Soto? Like, if they trade for Juan Soto, you can kiss Aaron Judge goodbye. You mentioned Clint Frazier. Did you know he changed his name to Jackson Frazier?
Yeah, because people were even saying that during the conversation.
I had no idea.
They're like, shouldn't you be saying, is this Jackson?
Really?
Yeah. He's a little different guy.
Yeah, that's interesting. 9982, he's gone. If he doesn't get his money, good is gone. To me, it's all about the money. Like, literally nothing else that has happened has anything to do with Aaron Judge. The arbitration stuff, like, if the Yankees offer him the most money, he's going to forget all about the arbitration stuff. If the Yankees offer him the money, he's going to forget all about this little ambush hesitation and pause that he had ahead of the All-Star game. 9982, I think it's time we see Yankees letting players walk because they think they can overpay and win, and now it's biting their behind with bad contracts. I think that they've gotten better at it than they used to be.
You mentioned the two they've overcome. Especially the Ellsbury deal.
Yep.
That was hanging over their head for a long period of time. I think maybe Cashman learned a lesson.
Yeah, but they also went out and signed Gerrit Cole.
They did, but you knew unless he blew out his arm, that was a move that anybody would have made.
The fact that Aaron Judge is 30 entering free agency is the biggest thing here. If Aaron Judge was 25, I think he gets 10. I think he gets 10 if he wants it. Somebody's going to pay him.
If you pay him that much money at 40, you're absolutely just that. First of all, that's so anti-Astros, but that's so anti-many analytical teams these days. Because as we've talked about over and over again, not only are you never going to get the return on the investment, but when you're talking about guys 38, 39, 40 making that kind of money.
I mean, I know that Tatis and Bryce Harper and eventually Juan Soto and all of those guys were young when they signed them, but they've also signed 12, 13, 15-year deals that's going to push them closer to
their 40s. Your two honorary All-Stars are the poster children for why you don't do that kind of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Yesterday at the All-Star game, we saw a lot of former Astros, a lot of players who used to play for the Astros now playing on other teams. The Astros are still good, though. Who's better, the Astros right now or all the old Astros? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, before we go to the break, tell you again about Doc Linville, because a lot of you guys, you know, you get out of the shower, you get up in the morning, you look in the mirror, and you're like, man, it's getting to that point. I got to shave my head. There's just no saving it anymore. I'm losing my hair, and there's nothing I can do about it. There actually is. And it's not anything that's going to mask the problem like sprays and creams and foams or a hat. It's simply put, it's called the Neograft procedure. And it can be a life changer and a game changer. And it definitely was a game changer for me. I wasn't thinking about it, but I absolutely was motivated once Doc Linville had a conversation with me and explained the Neograft procedure. Essentially, it's taking your own hair from areas that you will never lose it, the sides and the back, and putting it where you need it most to get more coverage area, whether it be in the front to turn that 8 head back to a 4 head, or that baboon's butt that you got peeking out the top and the back that you just don't like how it looks when people see you walking away. Well, he can rectify those situations and so much more. And because it's your own hair, it's awesome because it's going to take, it's going to grow, it's going to stay, and it's going to change your life by changing your appearance on a daily basis. The follicles that are moved have a 95%+ success rate. That means they're not going to fall out. They're not going to crash and burn. They're going to be there for the long haul, and they're going to give you exactly what you're going in for the procedure in the first place. And the good thing as an ESPN listener is you get a consultation with Doc Linville and his staff for free that normally costs $150 to see if it's right for you too. Go to 975hair.com right now and book an appointment. It's absolutely free. You sit down and you ask all the tough questions. Find out how long the procedure lasts. Find out what's involved in it. Find out exactly what the neo-grafting procedure is and the details about it and that success rate I was telling you about. They have financing options that they're happy to talk to you about and so much more. But see if it's right for you, because if it is, you're going to be as happy as me and John Granato and Jake Asman and all the other guys that have gone to Doc Linville, got the neo-graft, and can't stop talking about how wonderful it's been for us. It can be that way for you too. 975hair.com. Go see my friend Doc Linville.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get into the current Astros versus the old Astros. Who's better? In just a moment. But let's go out to the HRP listener line, 713-780-ESPN. Pena, Jeremy Pena, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
What's up, JP3?
I wish I was him. Hey, guys. I have a trade proposal for y'all. I might get a lot of negative energy from it. But I'm just spitballing. It's for the Hive and for fun. So I'm a firm believer. If you want a star, you have to trade a star for him also. So get a star, receive a star.
Okay.
Send a star and receive a star. And so I'm spitballing here. Hunter Brown and Kyle Tucker for Juan Soto. Give y'all's reaction, whatever. Thank you. Have a great day.
Appreciate the call, Pena. It's not even close to being enough. It's not even close to being enough. Look, Juan Soto is the headliner of the MLB trade deadline market. There's no doubt about it. I would say I wouldn't be shocked or surprised if he's traded, but I would say it's more likely that he's not traded than he is. I think it's like 60-40, 70-30 that he's still a National on August 3rd. The demand for the Nationals is going to be high, and rightfully so. He's one of the best players in all of baseball. He is very young, and he's probably, if he wants it, could get a $500 million contract, and I think he does want it. Represented by Scott Boras, we know he likes to get as much as he can out on the open market. Any idea of the Astros trading for Juan Soto is completely unrealistic. I think that they could put together enough pieces to get them. Like, if you want to go Tucker, Brown, Javier, Garcia, Pedro, like all the package we talked about earlier.
Yeah, we talked about earlier in terms of just the skeletal parameters where you would have to dive into your major league roster with more than just Tucker and at least one of your pitchers just to try and stay relevant and compete with the other teams that are going to be throwing prospects around.
Yeah, it's going to hurt, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to hurt, and it should hurt because it's Juan Soto. The second part of that, though, is like you're literally trading away a farm and a young player, a bunch of young players, where you don't have a lot of those in your Major League Baseball organization. You have a few, and few of them are very good, and most of them are already on the big league team. The second part of that is, like, I know Juan Soto still has 2 years of club control following this season. Are the Houston Astros going to give Juan Soto a 10-year deal for $500 million? They've proven that they won't go too long on
anybody.
It's completely
out of what they said that they're willing to do.
Yeah. Jim Crane would tell you that they were only willing to go 5 years. They went 6 years to Yordan Alvarez because they robbed Yordan Alvarez.
They surely did.
They got him for 17 and a half, less than $17.5 million.
Correa is the framework that changed everything. Correa let the cat out of the bag because he let it out of the bag for the Astros and said, they have flat out told me we are not into doing long-term deals at big-time money. And that's what Juan Soto's going to command, and he's going to get it.
Yeah. Juan Soto to the Houston Astros is perhaps the most unrealistic trade scenario for the Houston Astros that exist. Maybe if Luno was here, he would have the bravado and the cojones to do it. James Click hasn't shown that, and I'm not so sure it's the best thing to do for the long-term interest of the organization. And James Click has also told you that they're going to be very aggressive ahead of the August 2nd trade deadline, but they're not going to do anything that's going to sacrifice the long-term, goals and aspirations that this Houston Astros organization has had. He also told you ahead of the Major League Baseball draft that we build with our minor league system and we build through the draft. He's not going to throw that all for Juan Soto, who was a very good player for 2.5 years.
Look, Jeremy, I think when you factor in how we're looking at, like, what you're basing getting these deals done at and who you're basing it with, I think that you're already halfway there. You got Yordan, and instead of comparing what Judge got in free agency this next offseason or guys that we are comparing Yordan to based on the hot start he's gotten and the MVP-type numbers he was putting up till he got hurt, that would have killed the Astros. So you're halfway there. You already, like we said, got a steal in Yordan.
Mm-hmm.
If Kyle Tucker you get for about the same amount of money – and you get Kyle Tucker the same way before he ever hits the free agent market, then you have absolutely bamboozled the entire system to where you have more money to play with and more options to do more things. It does not involve overpaying and completely handcuffing your organization by going way too long and way too high a number for a Juan Soto. You basically say to yourself, you're probably in as good a situation as wherever he goes in the middle of your lineup already. And you're way less financial on the the hook for.
Yep.
That you can do a hell, you have the flexibility to do a whole bunch more than whoever gets him.
I'm worried about Tucker, that he's not going to sign a deal like Yordan. And the fact that you've already been in negotiations and didn't get anything done, I'm not sure.
Because his agent's going to play a big role in
it. Yeah, I don't think Tucker's going to be giving you a Yordan deal. But anybody telling you like the Astros should go get Juan Soto, they're fooling you. They're fooling you because it's not a realistic thing that the Houston Astros can go out, one, trade for Juan Soto, and but then two, keep him around after he's done, after his contract is up 2 years after the conclusion of this one. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So I saw a lot of former Astros in the All-Star game yesterday. Joe Musgrove was one of them. George Springer was named to the All-Star team, but he did not go, much like Jose Altuve did not go. We saw Gerrit Cole in the dugout, way too close to Justin Verlander, by the way. But the Houston Astros,
Did you ever know that Cole had that much personality, though, when they mic'd him up?
Yeah, I mean, Cole gets a lot of bad rap here.
He was entertaining.
Yeah. Let's eliminate the way Gerrit Cole left.
Yeah.
I like Gerrit Cole's time as a Houston Astro.
I don't know how you can't.
Yeah, well, one on the field.
Where he got to and what he was able to do. And look, from the community to everybody you speak with, until it became cut and dried, I'm leaving time. He was very much beloved in that clubhouse and around that organization and in this city.
Yeah. I mean, the way he left leaves a negative stain. Didn't win it on his way out, leaves a negative stain. But Gerrit Cole's 2 years in Houston were 95% very good. Yeah, probably. But anyways, watching the All-Star game yesterday, I wanted to compare former Astros against the current Houston Astros. And the former Houston Astros had to play with the big league team. They had to get called up to the Houston Astros. So Josh Hader would not be on the former Astros team.
Teoscar Hernandez?
Teoscar Hernandez would be the starting left fielder on the former Astros team. But I look at this and I feel like the Astros are still a better team than the former Astros. Like, they've let a lot of people walk. Gerrit Cole, George Springer, Carlos Correa. They released him outright. But yeah. But they're still better than all the players that were formerly on this team. Like, if you just look at the starting nine former Astros, and if I'm missing someone, 713-780-3776, Max Stassi is your catcher. J.D. Davis is your first baseman. Your infield's terrible outside of Correa. Marwin Gonzalez is probably your second baseman. Colin Moran is probably your third baseman. Correa is your shortstop. You have Teoscar in left, Straw in center, Springer in right. J.D. Martinez, the DH of this team. Your starting rotation, Gerrit Cole, Joe Musgrove, Charlie Morton, Wade Miley, and then you have like Dallas Keuchel, Zach Greinke conversation as who's your number five. Back into your bullpen, pretty good. Graveman, Melanson, McHugh, Harris is still trying to come back and pitch. Ken Giles, what is a former Astro team without Daly Raley? And that Ciano Perez die is a guy like a sub-2 ERA, so he's been pretty good.
Is he pitching?
I think in Milwaukee? I forget where he's pitching. They traded him. I think it might be Miami. No, Baltimore. Baltimore. Because he went with Elias. He went back with Elias. He's got a 1.45 ERA. He's a loogie. He's a left-handed specialist. Yep. It would be great on this team, actually. But anyways, that's your former Astro team. So, like, that's still probably not as good as the current Astros, right? Like, if you're looking at it in a 162-game season?
Yeah, it just seems a little light on the ex-Astros lineup. Like, we might be missing a few guys.
I don't think so.
You don't?
I did a pretty good dive on this.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I'm missing.
I'm not doubting you. Like, it just seems like they've let
your bench,
better infielders get away.
There's some pretty good infielders that aren't having good years, though. Like John Villar, Abraham Toro, Tony Kemp, Jed Lowry, Kiki Hernandez, remember, was an Astro.
Yeah.
Jake Mariznick, Robbie Grossman. But, like, not like you can have that conversation, you can have that debate, but it's not really moving the needle. The infield for that team, I don't think, is very good outside of Correa. The pitching rotation outside of Cole Musgrove, really not that good. Morton's not having a very good season. I think 162, the current Astros have a better record than the former Astros. I think best of seven, the current Astros beat the former Astros, which is kind of like an interesting angle to look at it, right? They've let all these people leave, all these people walk, yet they still have a better team than the ones that they let get away. But if you had to if it was a do or die, game seven, everything on the line.
The regular Astros.
You going current Astros over former Astros? Yeah. You're taking Verlander over Gerrit Cole?
Oh, yeah.
Really? Absolutely. You say with that such conviction.
I do, because it's all about who's hitting each guy, who's in the lineup against them in each way. And I don't think that the Astros have anything to worry about. I still love their lineup and believe in them and trust in them a lot more than the guys you got, you know, playing the field and batting in the batting order for the ex-Astros. I mean... It just, to me, that didn't wow me like I thought it would. I thought there would be some guys in the infield, and I'm trying to think of anybody that might have been passed over or missed that might have factored in, but it just it's not a very impressive lineup.
The lineup's what gets you, because like it's top heavy, right? Like JD Martinez can still swing it a little bit, still not bad. Teoscar Hernandez was an all-star last year, hit 40 home runs, like good offensive player. You have Correa, good player. George Springer, good player. But outside of that four, like now you're reaching a bit. Now you're talking about a JD Davis. You're talking about a Stassi. You're talking about whoever you want to play at second, whoever you want to play at third. The current Astros still have a deeper lineup. They have a deeper rotation.
What's the undersized catcher that's with the Phillies now?
Yeah, you're talking about Garrett Stubbs. He's my backup here.
Stubbs actually is probably having a better year, but not as many games as Max Stassi.
He's a backup. Yeah, so that's why I didn't make him my starter, but he did make the team over Robinson Chirinos. So who would you take? One game, do or die, game seven, ALCS, the current Astros or the former Astros? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's a Wednesday, 2 o'clock right around the corner. So, of course, in case we missed it, it's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real, fun sports.